Good morning, Your Honor.
Good morning.
May it please the court, on December 30th, 2010, the commission put the cart before the horse. The commission wanted to replace the existing high-cost funding mechanism that currently support telecommunications
services. Lean in a little bit. I'm just having a little trouble. Thank you.
That currently support telecommunications services with entirely new funding mechanisms that support broadband services. However, the commission had yet to create the new funding mechanisms or even formally propose them. Nonetheless, in violation of the Act, the Commission's own rules, and the Administrative Procedures Act, the Commission began collecting contributions today for mechanisms it hoped to adopt tomorrow. In a seven-paragraph order, the Commission claimed the authority under the Act to collect contributions that it had no intention of using for any existing mechanisms. It also claimed the authority under the Act to hold these funds until it could decide at a later date how they would best be used. The order cannot stand because the Act does not, and it could not, consistent with the United States Constitution, authorize the Commission to collect contributions for mechanisms that may or may not ever be adopted in the future. The plain language of the Act requires the Commission to establish specific...
Well, if they're not adopted, they'll revert to the regular program on January 31st, right?
Well, the fact
so
the Commission...
they're not going to be out there forever. I mean, under the Commission's own rule, they'll... Right, they'll revert to the normal system and be used after January 31 to reduce the contribution level.
Your Honor, that was actually first mentioned in the FCC's reply brief, but that actually proves that they were raised with no intention to use for any existing mechanism, because what they said was that if they didn't adopt the new mechanism, then they would refund them. So that goes to the point of how long the harm would last. It doesn't cure the harm that when they require the contributions.
And what's your best statutory argument that the commission can't do this? I mean, you spend many pages in your brief. You talk about two different sections, but tell us what you think is your strongest statutory argument that the commission lacks, that clearly shows what in the statute unambiguously tells us that the commission can't do this. Because if it's not unambiguous, you know, we're into Chevron 2 land here. So,
yes, Your Honor. So
what's your best argument?
Section 254 in plain language, 254D, says the commission shall ensure that all providers of interstate telecommunication services shall contribute on an equitable and non-discriminatory basis to the specific, predictable, and sufficient mechanisms established by the commission.
Right.
The commission's position cannot be supported unless you significantly amend that language. You'd have to insert may someday, may eventually be. You have to amend the adjective established to become established. You have to go against the plain language of the Act. And the Fifth Circuit in Texas Office of Public Utility Counsel ruled already that the Act was designed by Congress specifically to avoid the constitutional issues that we discuss in our brief. Specifically, the Act is designed to require the Commission first to establish the mechanisms and then to require the cost of those mechanisms to be distributed on an equitable and non-discriminatory basis amongst the providers of telecommunication services. This was a very intentional choice. So our best statutory argument is that our interpretation is mandated by the plain language of the Act, which is also consistent with the whole law and its purposes and goals.
Mm-hmm.
And so the plain language of the Act, when you look at the order does not identify any specific mechanism, nor does it identify any potential beneficiaries for the potential uses that the Commission may eventually put these revenues. As such, it cannot be described as specific or predictable. And the Commission has no means of determining whether the amounts raised by the order are sufficient. In fact, it's not even Commission decision that determines how much would be raised by the order. Rather, that's left to chance based on individual carriers whether they decide to relinquish their ETC designations or not. And the Commission has no idea how many carriers would do that.
When you say sufficient, you mean sufficient for the new purpose or sufficient for the present purposes?
That's A great question, Judge Garland.
Thank you. Nobody said that in the last case, so.
Well, it has to be sufficient for the existing mechanisms.
But we already hold that it's sufficient for the existing mechanisms.
Yes, Your Honor. You've held in the interim cap order, which we're not challenging here, that
exactly.
That on an interim basis, right, and we're not challenging that the support might be sufficient under the interim cap as it existed before. Mm-hmm. We're saying that the commission has no way when it collects these new funds that it wasn't collecting before to know whether the amount it's diverting and holding is sufficient.
It's not diverting any. I mean, the existing carriers get the same money they got before.
Well, actually, Your Honor, it is a whole new contribution. Because with that,
well, I understand about the contribution, but the sufficiency isn't about the contribution. The sufficiency is about sufficient for the service.
Oh yes, Your Honor. In our brief, what we're challenging is the commission's failure to explain or justify. They didn't do that in the order. If, as you're alluding to, perhaps the commission could have gone through an analysis and addressed the statutory responsibility.
But they didn't need to. They relied on the interim cap order, which we sustained.
Well, the interim cap order addressed a very different situation, and these circumstances have changed substantially since that time. For example, at the time in 2008, wireless exclusive households were only 11% of the population. Now they're over 22.8% and rising all the time. The wireline connections have dropped 28% since
that
time.
Why would that require a different outcome here?
Because in 2008, the commission came and put this interim emergency measure in place, and it assured the court that it intended to address universal service reform by November of that year. And under those circumstances, and in that way, this court decided that they didn't need to decide the ultimate question of sufficiency, but that for these purposes, it was sufficient to maintain the status quo. This is 3 years later.
I asked you why. Other than the fact that it's 3 years later, why is it different? You gave us some statistics about the increase in the use of wireless.
Well, because the case law, Your Honor, says that you can rely on a past order if nothing has changed.
But the change has to be significant. I mean, the dates change, too. But what's the significance of the increase?
The significance is, for example, in New Hampshire, the ETCs there are now getting 80% less than they would have under the identical support room support order, or in other words, 80%.
I mean, as a group, they're getting 80% less.
As a group, they're getting 80% less. In North Carolina, it's 43% less.
But didn't the commission think that the problem, the reason the interim cap was ordered is that, you know, the subsidies were just being used for people who already had landlines to get more wireless lines?
Your Honor.
And it sounds to me like your statistics sort of prove that that's continuing.
The problem with the order under review here is that the commission lacked the statutory authority to adopt it.
You've gone back to a different question. Why don't you stick with this one?
Can I ask on this one? In the Rural Cellular Association case, we said, in any event, petitioners have failed to demonstrate that their high-cost support would actually be insufficient. Petitioners include no cost data showing that they would, in fact, have to leave customers without service as a result of the cap. Did you put that evidence in this time?
No, Your Honor, because that's not the basis for our challenge to this order.
That's not your basis on the sufficiency ground either?
It's the failure to explain and to do an analysis, because the circumstances.
But they didn't explain it. They cited the old order, and you now say the circumstances are changed, and I think Judge Garland's question is, well, where's the evidence that it's changed?
Well, the evidence that has changed is in our reply brief at notes 14 and 15 and on pages 29 and 30. That shows that the evidence that the commission relied upon to justify the initial interim cap has changed significantly.
Is that the increase in wireless?
It's the increase in wireless households, the increase in the number of lines.
Yeah.
I thought there was a change worked by the order itself.
Yes, Your Honor.
In that it extended it beyond the Verizon Sprint relinquishments.
Yes, Your Honor, that's exactly right.
I don't know if that's significant in volume or not.
It is, Your Honor. It's a different motivation. The order under review here was changed for a different motivation than the commission initially imposed the interim cap. The interim cap order was designed just to maintain the status quo. That's all. This new order is not designed to maintain the status quo. This new order was designed to collect funds in anticipation of potential future reforms. Mm-hmm. And the commission, by conceding in its brief that these funds would be returned if they were unable to adopt the reform.
That's a different issue than your why don't you stay with the inadequate explanation? We've gone over the ground, or you have, about the statutory authority.
Sure.
So what is your objection, in part, that they've extended the reach of their order diverting funds to a new purpose without showing that the result is, which is to say, lesser support for the Universal Service Fund than would have been true under the interim cap,
right,
that new lower level, right, is sufficient?
Right.
That's what they failed to identify.
That is exactly right, Your Honor. They failed to justify this new lower level of support, and they're unable to rely on the earlier interim cap order for two reasons.
Well, how did they justify the sufficiency in the interim order that we approved?
Well, in the interim order, what they said was, we're making no final determination with respect to sufficiency, but we have to take this emergency step. The cap cannot grow until we do universal service reform, which we intend to do by November 19th, 2008.
But didn't they have to make a showing that in the interim their support would be, or there was reason to think it would be sufficient?
They did, Your Honor, and we're not challenging that.
No, I understand, but what did they produce there to show that it would be sufficient?
What they said there is
that apparently, they didn't produce here.
That's right. It was a very short period of time, and what they said was, if a new ETC comes into the market, then we'll just reduce the amount of support proportionally. And if one exits the market and there's more support available, then we'll distribute that to the other ETCs. And the assumption was, Your Honor, that since it was such a short period of time, that there wouldn't be big changes in the market. Since the interim cap has been in place for over 3 years now, there have been massive changes. There have been over 80 new ETCs that have entered the market, and changes in demographics.
In your brief, you make the observation that the decision and review was not data driven.
Right.
Right, that was your phrase.
That's right.
Sort of policy driven.
It was policy driven.
But it sounds like that's equally true of the prior order. I realize it's for an interim period of time, but it was equally not data driven.
But it was a different purpose, Your Honor. It was the purpose for the earlier order was just to maintain the status quo for a short period of time in anticipation of a data-driven order that would address the fundamental issues that the commission
had. And why isn't the current order essentially for a limited period of time, and indeed until January 12th, even had they not come up with the current new rumor.
Because the new order wasn't designed to maintain the status quo. It was actually designed to change the status quo.
Well, but insofar as it extended the reach of the diversion, right? But the first order changed the status quo by establishing a diversion.
The first order, Your Honor, are you referring
the
core wireless?
The order reviewed in the previous case.
Oh, well, it actually didn't divert any funds at all. All it said was that to the extent that
it withheld funds from the ETCs that would have, but for that order, been available for distribution.
That's true, and this is a great point to focus on here, because what it did was it maintained the contribution factor from rising, and in so doing, made sure that if the demand exceeded that amount that was currently locked in, that they just reduced the available amount to the ETCs. This order under review.
That's the cap.
That's the cap. Okay. This order under review is fundamentally different, because what they've said was, we're lowering the cap, but we're going to continue to collect from consumers and from carriers an additional amount that we're going to store. That is a fundamental difference and a key reason why the interim cap order is not substantially in the same position as this new order, and why you can't just cite, without any explanation, the previous order and claim that that's sufficient to have accomplished your statutory duties under the Act.
But the previous order said that the amounts available to the existing ETCs were sufficient, and we upheld that. And any existing ETC gets to keep the amount that it had before. It just doesn't get more from the exiting ETCs, right?
Well, the amount that ETCs get now is fundamentally lower than it was in 2008. And there may be areas where that amount is sufficient, but it's no longer fair to say that necessarily the amounts continue to be sufficient in all areas.
Why does it get less than it got before?
Because new markets, new ETCs have entered the market. Over 80 ETCs in 30 states have entered the market since 2008.
And so that why would a particular ETC get less?
Excuse me?
Why would a particular ETC get less?
Because what it does is it takes line count away, so the demand greatly exceeds the available cap in a given state, so that the amount given to any individual ETC is proportionally reduced.
Ah, proportionally, you mean to the demand, but they're still getting the same amount.
No, each individual ETC gets substantially less. For example, in New Hampshire, the ETCs there get 80% less than they would have before, individually. No, collectively, they get the
would
same
have
amount.
But for this order, right?
They would have.
Not less than they were getting before. That's an ambiguity that runs throughout your brief, frankly. But it seems to me that although you, I think it was quite misleading and the FCC wasn't helpful in clarifying it either. The objection, as I understand it, is that you are not getting as much as you would have but for the order under review, but you are getting what you did get dollar for dollar before. Is that wrong?
On the day before the order, yes, Your Honor.
Okay. Yeah, that's wrong. That's correct.
That is correct, Your Honor.
Correct. Okay. So the same cash flow is coming in. Circumstances may have changed in terms of whether it's sufficient, but the same cash flow is coming in. You would have gotten a greater subsidy but for the existing, the new order, under order and review.
The same cash flow from the day before this order under review, not the same that would have been in 2008.
Yeah.
And you know, these changes are really significant. I can put a face on this. For example, suddenly, I see that my time is up.
Yes, sure. You can just finish your sentence, and I have one question.
Okay. Southern Link Wireless has used these funds to put in 15 new towers over the last year, and the services that they provide in the rural areas have been crucial to the state of Alabama, particularly in the latest tornadoes. And I have letter after letter from various different emergency response people.
Isn't there a waiver provision? What about the commission says there's a waiver provision here, right?
There is, Your Honor.
So why couldn't in Alabama, why couldn't the carriers there just take advantage of the waiver procedure?
The commission has not addressed a single waiver that has been filed by various ETCs.
Well, but that's a different case. We don't know that. I mean, maybe you need to file, maybe if there are a lot of waiver petitions pending and the commission's not acting, you need to file a mandamus petition. But you're telling us that this order is unlawful, and if the commission has a waiver provision in it, which would allow it to deal with these specific problems, then why doesn't that preserve the legality of the commission's decision?
Well, because the commission here didn't create any new waiver.
It didn't have to. It said there's an existing waiver program. Just use it.
Well, Your Honor,
and you told me that carriers are in fact using it, right?
Carriers are not using the waiver provision.
I just thought you told me that they haven't acted on it.
They filed it, but the commission hasn't acted on any of them.
Well, but the point is they know about it and they filed it. And if the commission isn't pursuing them, you have a remedy through mandamus. It's just that my only question is, and you really haven't answered it, is why doesn't the availability of that waiver provision preserve the legality of this order, even assuming it's got a problem at all?
Well, so, Your Honor, we believe that the order under review is unlawful for numerous reasons.
This
is one of them.
Well, let me ask you a completely different.
Can I stay with that?
Yeah, sure. Please.
I'll ask the FCC this, but I don't think they argued that the safety valve saves this. Mm-hmm. But here's my question. If the petitions for under the safety valve were granted and your constituent companies, in some instances, therefore, got a larger subsidy than they would otherwise, where does that incremental subsidy come from? Does it reduce the amount going into the rainy day broadband fund?
Yes.
It does?
Yes, Your Honor. And the important point to note is that even if these waivers were granted, right, it wouldn't impact any of the reasons why this order is unlawful, because again, we're challenging not the actual sufficiency here, because we believe that in some areas it may be too much support. In other areas, it's certainly not enough support. What we challenge is the commission's failure in a 7-paragraph order to even engage in any of this. And it's not for agency counsel or the courts or even the commission in a subsequent order to supply the missing explanation and justification.
Well, what, if anything, did you put before the commission in your comments beyond this argument, but by way of data showing the insufficiency, not just the lower amount, but the insufficiency of that lower amount?
Your Honor, in, for example, the Rural Cellular Association's comments in the underlying proceeding, which is cited in our opening brief, there was specific data put in about the impact on individual ETCs caused by the lack of sufficiency of support.
Well, if those are the data that I'm thinking of, they said the amount went, subsidy was, in one instance, $17,000 per month, I think, $210,000 a year, less than it would otherwise have been. Doesn't tell me whether it's sufficient.
What they said was that carriers
insufficient.
I'm sorry, Your Honor. What they said was that carriers are actually making decisions about turning down towers and not providing service to the consumers for whom this fund is meant to benefit.
I'm sorry. What? Who said that?
Rural Cellular Association, in its comments in the underlying proceeding, which are cited. I'm sorry, I don't know the JA site in our brief, but they're cited there.
And they gave examples of companies that were doing what, not accepting new wireless customers?
Considering turning down towers. I believe it was a North Carolina, Carolina West Wireless, I believe, Your Honor. But
turning down?
Yeah, the
meaning
carriers
what?
Making decisions about decommissioning wireless.
Existing towers.
Existing towers.
Wasn't that just exactly what the commission's concern was with the interim cap, is that the money was being used to provide additional wireless service to people who didn't need it?
Your Honor, there's great agreement that the Universal Service Fund needed to be reformed. In fact, the petitioners here actually proposed changes and elimination of the identical support rule. So we're not trying to argue that reform isn't necessary. All we're saying is that the particular order under review here didn't comply with the law.
Okay. Do you have anything else?
Thank you.
No. Okay, thank you.
Good morning. May it please the court. 3 years ago in the interim cap order, the commission imposed an interim cap on the amount of high-cost support distributed to competitive ETCs, including petitioners. Petitioner Rural Cellular Association argued that its support would be insufficient under the cap. The commission disagreed, and so did this court. In the order on review, the commission did one thing. It amended the interim cap rule so that when a competitive ETC relinquishes its support in a state, that relinquished support won't be redistributed to other carriers. Rather than perpetuate the dysfunctional identical support rule, which provides petitioner support not based on their own cost, but rather on the cost of the incumbent wireline local exchange carrier, the commission reasonably decided that relinquished support should be used to subsidize new universal service programs that actually achieve the objectives set forth in Section 254 of the Act. Petitioners contend that this was unlawful. Petitioners contend, once again, that their support will be insufficient. Yet petitioners will receive the same amount of support under the interim cap. Petitioners have failed to make any meaningful attempt to demonstrate that their support will be rendered insufficient.
Why is the burden on them?
I'll let Judge Ginsburg go, please.
Why is the burden on the petitioners to show that it's insufficient when their argument is that the commission, which has an obligation to provide a sufficient amount, has made no demonstration that the amount is sufficient?
Because, Your Honor, they're getting the same amount of support that the commission and this court already found to be sufficient. In the interim cap order, we froze their support. As a result of the rule amendment and the order on review, they will receive the same amount of support.
When was the interim cap order issued?
The interim cap order was issued in spring of 2008, Your Honor. And as
froze the amount at the then current level?
That's correct, Your Honor.
And nothing's happened since then that's material to their claim?
No, it's not, Your Honor. Now, petitioners are arguing that their support is insufficient because new competitive ETCs have come into the market.
Right,
and they've taken lines.
That's how I thought your answer to Judge Ginsburg was curious, because it's true that they're getting the same amount, but they're saying but for the order under review, they would be getting more.
That's correct, Your Honor.
And so I would have thought your answer was the commission did provide an explanation. It's the explanation it provided in the interim cap order.
That is my answer, Your Honor.
No, how can that explain the change that you've made? You didn't just renew or make permanent the interim cap order.
Yes, we did, Your Honor, because the
that's
amount
all you
of,
did?
That's all we did. All we did is we
you
held
didn't
that
extend
one.
Extend it to beyond the Sprint and Verizon relinquishment?
No, Your Honor, okay. We did not. All we did is we held both in the core wireless order, which dealt with the relinquished Sprint and Verizon subsidies and the order on review, that whenever a carrier gives up its support, that relinquished support will not be redistributed to other competitive ETCs. And in other words,
that appears for the first time where?
I'm sorry, Your Honor.
Where does that relinquished support will not be redistributed to the others? Where does that appear?
That appears in the order on review, Your Honor.
Not in the interim order.
No, Your Honor.
There's something new.
There's something new, Your Honor, but they get the same amount of support, support that the commission and the court already found to be sufficient in the interim cap order. As a result of the amendment in the order on review, what petitioners won't get is the $530 million in support that Verizon Wireless and Sprint Nextel will relinquish each year. In other words, what they're getting, Your Honor, is they're not getting a consumer-subsidized windfall, and that was reasonable because the commission, as far back as the interim cap order, found two things. Number one, that their support would be sufficient under the interim cap, and nothing in the order on review changes the amount of support that they would otherwise get. Two, the commission found
they would otherwise get but for the order under review?
You're right. That's correct, Your Honor. What we're doing is we're not redistributing relinquished subsidies. We're not redistributing the subsidies that are relinquished by Verizon Wireless and Sprint Nextel. In other words, petitioners, let's say, received $100 in the state of Montana under the interim cap prior to the order on review. After the order on review, they'll still get $100 in the state of Montana. What they will get is the $5 relinquished by Sprint, Nextel, or Verizon Wireless.
Sufficiency, though, is related to their costs, right?
It's not, Your Honor. Their support.
Sufficient to do what, then?
Your Honor, sufficiency, as this court recognized in Rural Cellular Association, support has to be sufficient to provide adequate telephone service to customers. Under the identical support rule, petitioner support is not based on their cost.
The identical support rule is the problem here that created all of this mess, right?
That is correct, Your Honor.
It's like the product of the Soviet Ministry of Telecommunications. And you've been trying to patch it up ever since and now want to abandon it, I gather.
That is true, Your Honor. In our recently adopted order, we've abandoned it.
It did what it did. It created this flow of subsidies that was ill-conceived because in many cases it was subsidizing what you call duplicative service, or it was creating an incentive to invest in the low-cost portions of high-cost rural areas. All of that. It was none of which was anticipated, obviously.
Agreed, Your Honor. And so what we decided to do in the interim cap order is rather than take the $500 million in annual support relinquished by Verizon and Wireless and perpetuate that dysfunctional rule by providing petitioners support, or redistributing support pursuant to that dysfunctional rule, we held that the relinquished subsidy should be taken out from underneath the interim cap.
How do you know, or what reason do you have to believe, that doing that remains sufficient to provide the adequate service and so on, which means it has to cover their costs, so it's not going to happen, right?
I have several responses to that, Your Honor. First and foremost, in the interim cap order in 2008, the commission found that the identical support rule wasn't necessary to ensure sufficient support, and sufficiency is measured as adequate telephone service to customers, and here's why. In paragraph 13 of the interim cap order,
we have the identical support rule in this rulemaking.
We didn't get rid of it, Your Honor, but we decided not to perpetuate it. I'm sorry, Your Honor?
Kept the identical support rule, which is creating the problem, and put an interim Band-Aid on it while you thought about how to solve that problem.
Actually, Your Honor, that interim Band-Aid was placed on the problem in the interim cap order, and the commission relied on its findings in that order.
Well, that's what I'm referring to, right.
And exactly.
Now, right.
And exactly.
Now that you've got the new broadband program, but that's not part of the current record.
That's correct.
But what's going to happen with the identical support rule and this whole program in the new broadband order? Is it gone?
No, Your Honor. According to the executive summary that we filed with the court, the commission is going to eliminate the identical support rule. And what
That's
it's going
to. I just asked you. Okay.
Yeah. So what happens? So in the new order, Your Honor.
We eliminate
the identical support rule.
Right.
What we will do is we will replace that rule with a new mobility fund. And the mobility fund has the advantage that it corrects the problems with the identical support rule. It corrects the problems that Judge Ginsburg just discussed. First and foremost, support under the new mobility fund will only be available in unserved and underserved areas. So carriers no longer will be able to use it to provide duplicative support in low-cost, densely populated areas. The other issue with respect to that is that recipients of support under the new mobility fund will not be able to use subsidies to provide service in an area where a wireless carrier is already providing service, which again goes to the duplicative aspects, the fact that under the current identical support rule, the rule is actually supporting multiple wireless carriers in a market, which created the up spiral in support, which resulted in the interim cap that you affirmed in Rural Cellular Association. If I may, can I talk?
The examples that the petitioners give in their brief and here always involve the sufficiency of the amount of change in the support in the aggregate within a state, right?
Yes, Your Honor.
And your response is always, well, each carrier is getting what it got before.
Yes, Your Honor.
But there is there not, a diminution in the support available in some states?
Yes, Your Honor. And I'm glad you asked that question because I wanted to address your concerns about sufficiency. In paragraph 13 of the interim cap order, the commission found that identical support wasn't necessary to ensure adequate telephone service to customers, and this is why. The commission recognized that in many markets, competitive ETCs were providing service before they received subsidies, and they often provide service in competition with carriers that don't receive subsidies. It's the commission's understanding from Verizon and Sprint, the carriers that are giving up the majority of the funds that are at issue here, that they are not going to turn off a single cell tower in a market where they give up their support. In other words, they are going to continue to provide service. So given the prior findings and the earlier
Verizon
and Sprint, and that's really the funding at issue here. I mean, and that's the funding that the petitioners want. That's the $500 million in annual support that petitioners would like to have redistributed to them. So, I mean, Verizon and Sprint are going to continue service. They're just doing so without subsidies. Moreover, the commission previously found in the interim cap order that the identical support rule wasn't necessary to ensure identical support to customers. You know, and this court affirmed those findings in Rural Cellular Association. And I would note, as you were pointing out, Judge Shadel, there is a waiver provision.
Judge Ginsburg said
is there
you
anything?
Didn't. Oh, Judge Ginsburg said that you didn't argue that point. Is that true?
Oh, we do argue that point in our brief, Your Honor. We do rely on the safety valve.
Maybe that's where I got the idea.
Yeah, no, and I think that's an excellent point. And I'd like to talk about.
Thank you.
I'd like to talk.
Point in your brief is excellent.
Thank you.
You think that is what you're saying.
We do, Your Honor. We do make that point in our brief.
Where is that safety valve point?
I will.
Co-counsel can get it together while we go on. What is there in the order along the lines that you just described? About the
just interrupt. It's at page 40 of your brief.
40.
Yeah.
Or is it page 40? Yes.
40. Yeah.
What is there in the order along the lines you've described? No, you know, about no towers shutting down and all of that.
It's not in there, Your Honor. And as we set forth in our brief, it didn't have to be in there because the commission was relying on its findings in the previous interim cap order. And this court has recognized that the commission isn't required to reinvent the wheel every time it issues a subsequent order. I mean, the findings in the interim cap order are equally applicable here. And with respect to the waiver, I'd like to note that in the first Rural Cellular Association case, petitioners never made mention of the own cost waiver exception, and they do the same here.
In the interim cap order, the sufficiency point was keyed to the something of an emergency situation that you all perceived. Certainly sustainability was keyed to that.
That's correct.
I think sufficiency was as well, wasn't it? Under the circumstances where you've got this problem.
You know, in that case, Your Honor, we imposed the interim cap because we were concerned about the sustainability of the fund. And sufficiency was an issue because the commission reasoned, and this court affirmed our understanding, that sufficient support is enough to ensure that consumers have adequate telephone service, but it's not excessive support. And given our finding that the identical support rule wasn't working as planned and that it was resulting in this upward spiral in support, the court found it reasonable for the commission to impose the interim cap on competitive ETCs.
Can I ask you to back up maybe 25 steps? Sure. When you say that the amount is the same, right? Mm-hmm. You mean the amount to an individual carrier?
Yes, Your Honor.
You mean the amount per customer of the individual carrier, or you mean the gross amount to the individual carrier?
The gross amount to the individual carrier, Your Honor.
So if the individual carrier starts serving more, they don't get any more.
That's correct, Your Honor, but that would have been the case prior to the order on review. That's a consequence of the interim cap. And if you read the interim cap order anticipates the situation where, due to line growth, the competitive ETC's per line support would be reduced. So the order on review does nothing to affect that. All the order on review holds is that petitioners won't get a $500 million windfall when Verizon Wireless and Sprint Nextel give up their subsidies. And on that point, Your Honor, that's why the commission put the own cost waiver in the interim cap order. If there truly is a situation where, due to line growth or any other circumstance, a competitive ETC support is inadequate, it's insufficient to provide adequate telephone service to customers, they can take advantage of that own cost waiver. And Judge Tatel, you're right. To the extent that they argue that the commission hasn't acted quickly enough on the handful of petitions that have been filed, only of which I think three request additional support, the proper remedy is a mandamus petition. It's not to ask this court to remand or to vacate this order so that every competitive ETC in America, irrespective of its cost, will get an additional $500 million in universal service support each year.
Can you explain again, with respect to the other argument, as to how this is a specific, predictable, and sufficient mechanism established by the commission?
Sure, Your Honor. That argument misreads established in Section 254D of the Act. In order to win this case on the temporary reserve, you have to accept petitioner's view that established is a past tense verb, such that the commission has to establish is used in Section 254D.
Well, that is a past tense. It's got an ED at the end.
It is, Your Honor, but as this court has repeatedly held, and we put this in our recent 28J letter, what appears to be a past tense verb can also be interpreted as a phrasal adjective. And as we explain in our brief,
we rewrite the English language all the time here.
Well, Your Honor, I think, you know, the question before the court is, you know, what is the proper interpretation of Section 254D? Petitioners are arguing that this is a Chevron Step 1 case, that there's only one permissible interpretation of Section 254D. But to get there, they read already into the statute, so that established means already established mechanisms. And as this court knows under Step 1,
you say it means established or to be established.
That's correct, Your Honor, because established is a phrasal adjective, so there's no tense associated with it.
What phrase is it adjectiving? In this example, what phrase is it?
The specific, predictable, and sufficient mechanisms, Your Honor. And, you know, that's a cross-reference to Section 254B5. The Commission's view of the statute is that we are allowed to collect universal service contributions prior to creating universal service distribution mechanisms. Once we create those distribution mechanisms, Your Honor, those mechanisms have to be specific, predictable, and sufficient. That's what the Fifth Circuit said in Alenco. In Alenco, the Fifth Circuit said that our rules for distributing subsidies have to be specific, predictable, and sufficient. And again, even there, it was the rules, not the amounts themselves. So petitioners here are confusing contributions with distributions. Our interpretation of Section 254D, which is a reasonable interpretation and thus should prevail here, is that established merely references the mechanisms that we have to create pursuant to Section 254B5. It stands for the unremarkable proposition that when we collect universal service contributions, we can only spend them on universal service programs, but it doesn't mean that we have to first establish those programs.
Did you want to follow?
No.
Okay. One last question. What's your response to their argument with respect to your regulation 709A3 that you violated your own 14-day rule?
Well, Your Honor, first of all, I believe they forfeited that argument because it appears for the first time in the reply brief.
Suppose they didn't. What's the answer to it?
Your Honor, the 14-day rule does not provide substantive rights to petitioners. It's a shot clock. The way the rule works is USAC files its demand projection with the commission. The commission issues a public notice, and then the commission has 14 days to act. If we don't act, that projection takes effect. Here, in the core wireless order, where we established the temporary reserve, petitioners actually received far more notice of the demand projection than they would have under the rule. In the core wireless order, the commission instructed USAC to project demand at the full amount of the interim cap months in advance. If we had followed the rule specifically, they only would have gotten 14 days notice. So there's no harm to petitioners.
Anything else? No.
No, I'm going to be right back.
Okay. Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Your Honors.
Let's see. Mr. Daubert, I think you used up all your time, right? You can take 2 minutes. You don't need to wait for that, right? We'll just keep going. Yeah.
Go ahead. Can I wait for Judge Ginsburg?
No. He didn't ask me to. He just said he'd be right back.
Okay. Thank you very much.
There's a recording of this, yeah. So he'll be able to listen to that.
Okay. Well, a couple of things that this case is not about. This case is not about the interim cap order. This case is not about the core wireless order where the commission set aside the $530 million from Verizon and Sprint specifically. This case is not even about the wisdom of the commission's decision to eliminate the identical support rule, or even if it would be wise to stockpile money if they had the statutory authority to do so. What this case is about the commission's lack of authority under the statute to adopt the particular order they did, and its failure to follow the Administrative Procedures Act by failing to mention or explain its thoughts on sufficiency, no matter how good an explanation that counsel or this court or the commission in a subsequent order can provide. It did not do so under the order on review, and that is the order that counts here. When we talk about the amount of sufficiency, since we continue to talk about this issue, our challenge is that they didn't address it. But if you want to talk about the actual amount of sufficiency, in 2008, when the cap was imposed, each ETC got 100% of the amount that it was entitled to under the interim cap order. To say that nothing has changed since 2008 is not accurate as a factual matter at all. There have been significant changes. The drops have been as much as 80%. This is the type of change in circumstances that requires an explanation by the commission. Even if it could provide it, even if there's a good explanation, it must be provided on the order on review. So when you look at the order on review, there's only 7 paragraphs. That's what we ask you to review. Well,
paragraph 5 directly refers us to the notice of proposed rulemaking, and then goes on and explains why this is consistent with the goals described in the interim cap order, including almost everything that opposing counsel said about the explanation for why this is sufficient. So why, I'm not sure why this is not sufficient of an explanation.
2 reasons, Your Honor. 1 is the facts have changed. But 2 is the motivation.
The facts have changed. We explained in the rural cellular case what you have to do. You have to provide evidence that because of the costs, you're unable to reach particular customers. Where's that evidence?
Right, Your Honor. We're not challenging the actual sufficiency. We believe that in some areas there's probably too much support, in others there isn't. We challenge the commission's failure to engage in this analysis here, and we brought evidence to the commission.
You're missing the point. So let's assume we disagree with you.
Yes.
That the commission can't rely on the interim cap order. Just assume that we think that they can.
Mm-hmm.
Now what's your argument?
Well, the order still needs to be vacated because the commission lacks the authority to require.
Now forget the statutory argument. For
sure.
My hypothetical is based on the fact that, 1, you lose on that we think it's ambiguous.
Okay.
And 2, we don't agree with you that the commission can't rely on the interim order.
Yes.
Okay. Isn't your argument then, well, things have changed?
Yes.
Well, where's the evidence for that?
The evidence is in the underlying proceeding.
Okay. Do you have anything else? Okay. Thank you. Case is submitted.